Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife. I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy, and we're on a mission to help you make the most of your magnificent midlife. We'll be tackling everything from mind and body wellness to HRT and your sex drive. Trish and I are here to help you have a stylish second act and answer all your midlife questions on fashion, beauty, careers, relationships, family, and as always, the challenges and joys of parenting teens.
Well, there's a definite nip in the air, isn't there?
There
it's
is.
It's chilly. It's feeling autumnal, which means, you'll be pleased to hear, Lorraine, I've got my vests out.
Oh,
my vests
God.
Are back out.
I love wearing a vest.
And I see that you have your little nod to winter that you're wearing today.
What do you call it, Trish?
I'm going to call it a woolly tabard.
Tabard. Do you remember that moment in the Bicester Village changing rooms? I don't know why we were sharing a changing room. Bizarre.
God knows.
And you kept saying to me, you can't wear that tabard. You can't wear that tabard, as if I was going to go and make some kind of religious speech in it.
I don't know. I think more like a sort of dinner lady's top. But anyway, it's a very stylish one. Actually, that is a very nice one that you're wearing. It's a sort of lilac-y pale blue.
Well, it keeps you warm. But it's on the outside and it's fashionable. It's not on the inside and fluffy like a vest.
Yes, keeping our lungs and kidneys warm. That's what it's all about, isn't it? After a few weeks of emptiness, doom and gloom, you'll all be glad to know that we've perked right up. Can we say a big thank you to all of you lovely listeners for getting us through a tough few weeks with your lovely emails, messages and Facebook posts? I mean, to be honest, it doesn't take a lot to put a smile on our faces,
no.
Does it? I mean, you were very excited, Lorraine, by Sarah's post on the group about T-Bay motorway services, weren't you?
I know. One minute I'm in the front row in Milan and the next I'm at T-Bay up north, very far up north, almost in Scotland, buying a £3.99 tea cake and loving
yes.
it. Yes, I felt you were quite unimpressed with my enthusiasm when I mentioned this the other week, dropping my daughter number two off at uni in Scotland. I think you might have rolled your eyes, actually, Trish, as well.
Yes.
But listen, the people on the Facebook group, Sarah, they're backing me up. They're saying it's their favourite stop in the whole of the country. And she's always there when she's journeying from Scotland to the southwest. So
reverse of your journey, but okay, fair enough. I think we can say 1-0 to you in this riveting motorway service station.
Well, I'll start a blog about it for you all.
Right, I'm just going to quickly nip back to the emptiness because I want to tell everybody it's not that bad. The twins are absolutely loving uni, so that's making me feel a lot better about the fact that they're not there. And Neil and I are adjusting to being on our own once again. We're singing Just the Two of Us. Do you remember that song, Bill Withers? Just the two of us. Except, of course, there aren't.
Matching slippers yet.
Well, yes, that's coming to go with our vests. But, of course, there are four of us because there's the dog and the cat. And you won't be surprised to hear that Margot is not adjusting well. She's not good with change.
She's not at all. We had a high-level meeting, didn't we, on Zoom the other day, and you were hiding from Margot. You were hiding from her because she was stalking you. Like Kato from the Pink Panther.
Oh, God,
everywhere
I turned, there she was. Yes, because she's normally glued to Esme, you see, and she sleeps in her room. She's there with her all the time. And when we did the deep clean of the children's rooms, it needed deep cleaning, both of them.
Oh,
the Hoover was full of fluffy Margot cream-coloured fur, no less. From Esme's room. So just full of Margot fur. But Neil made the mistake of shutting the door on the room so she couldn't get in. And she was very upset. She was raging and yowling about it, literally. It's very annoying.
You know what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to call in the cat Reiki person.
Oh,
remember Lucy Wyndham-Reed, who we had on last week, was telling us about her, that she massages her cats and they're very...
Oh, yes, they lie on their backs with their paws in the air.
Yes. Or I could make a little feline muzzle. run one up on my sewing machine. Talked about sewing, didn't we?
We did talk about sewing. I like the idea, but I'm not sure your sewing skills are up to it, quite frankly. Just listen to last week's nostalgia noodle if anybody wants to know what we're talking about.
Sew the top bit.
Enough.
Hang her up in the cupboard.
Call the RSPCA. Stop right now. Stop right now. So on to more important and less jovial matters. You've had a bit of a week of it, haven't you? Because you had to make an emergency dash to see your dear old dad.
No T-Bay services for me. I had to head down to Plymouth because my dad had a heart attack. He's all well and good now. He's home. It was a quick trip down to see him because he wasn't in long, thankfully. But let me tell you, those nurses at Derriford Hospital in Devon are just absolutely wonderful, and we could learn so much. And the nurse that looked after my dad was called Joy, and she was her name.
She was Joy.
I watched her pottering around, administering high-level care, and it was looked very complicated in some cases, and she was just really joyous.
Oh, well, that's really good to hear. So big up to the nurses everywhere, not just in Derriford Hospital. But this is the kind of classic thing, isn't it? You're the filling in the classic midlife sandwich right now, aren't you? No sooner have you got kids settled in university, starting new schools, when an aged pea needs your time and support. Yes. And, you know, it's not easy, is it? And that's the kind of reason really why we're here, why we started the podcast, to support each other through the midlife mayhem and on the Facebook group too. So if you're in need of a little support, do come on over and join in the chat on Facebook. We love hearing your stories. We're here to give advice, support, just virtual hugs. And of course, we love your brain fog moments, brain farts, and your memories and nostalgia noodles too.
I know. We love all of that, all the threads. And there's always somebody who can help out who's been through it and can give some support and information and resources as well. Now, our special guest today has sparked a few memories for me. TV presenter Anthea Turner. Very excited about meeting Anthea. She's always very jolly. Because I was a bit jealous of her, like I was Fern Britton. She presented all the Gen X TV shows, like my favourite too. Blue Peter, Top of the Pops.
Oh, she got all the good gigs. But I'm not sure that is why you're really jealous of her, because she was married to Peter Powell, wasn't she? And long term.
Peter Powell.
Rachel. Well, there we are, nail on the head. Long-term listeners of this show will know that you stalked Peter Powell, didn't you, at a Radio 1 roadshow in Cornwall many moons ago. That's why you're jealous of Anthea.
You've got to go back into the archives and to listen to this scintillating stuff. He was the first celebrity I met because it was my first assignment ever as a journalist on the Cornish Times, was to go and follow the roadshow, the Radio 1 roadshow, which was basically just a shack and some porter captains on a beach in Cornwall.
Oh, but happy
you have an
days.
Anthea story.
Well, I do,
I feel
actually.
Like it might it's be more impressive.
Well, it's a slightly once removed Anthea story, and I've sort of always loved her since this. So, about 20 years ago, long time ago, my Neil, who was and will be a photographer, he did a cover shoot of Anthea Turner for She magazine. Do you remember She?
She magazine.
Yeah.
Somebody called Alison. I was a bit scared of her. I used to edit that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, it's a really nice magazine. And Neil got kind of assigned to do this photo shoot. So he had to toodle off in the car down to Anthea's house. And the concept for the shoot, I do urge everybody to Google this because you'll see the picture. You may or may not remember it. Do you remember American Beauty, that iconic film, you know, when she's lying on those rose petals? It's that really iconic image. Well, they recreated it with Anthea and strawberries instead of petals. So, which is actually very effective. It's a really, really pretty magazine cover because it's all about Anthea being laid bare. And so there she is, sort of naked, covered in strawberries. And Neil got to take the photograph, and he said she was so friendly. And in order to kind of get the right angle for the shot, Anthea's husband at the time, Grant Bovey, brought over his, he had a sort of digger thing with a bucket in it, and Neil got into the bucket and shot the pictures of Anthea in the strawberries from above.
Do you think she just was game and just carried on?
Absolutely. And then they made them cups of tea. They were delightful. She was delightful. Do you think I've made that up? Is it like
no I think I lied to you? I feel like that's the kind of
silliness we got up to in magazines in those days. Should we do that for our next magazine cover?
Oh, I think so. Strawberries. I might do some beetroot, maybe. That could be good.
Stop it. Anyway, we're going to find out more about Anthea and what she's been up to when she joins us shortly. But today, we're also doing something else I quite enjoy. We are morphing into agony aunts. Joan and Jerrica, watch out. I know you're quaking in your boots. We've got some juicy midlife dilemmas, and we're going to unleash our alter egos. You might remember Angry Millie from Viz. Millie,
that's you.
That's me.
That's you. Yeah.
And Judgy Marion. That's you, Trish.
That's me, Judgy
Marion. And we're going to find out what they might do in these situations, as well as offering some sensible advice too.
Yes, it will make sense as we get going, I promise.
It won't make sense, Trish. None of it makes sense.
No, Amanda, our producer, should just edit it out. I think that we can always rely on Amanda. Anyway, as always, we'll be ending the show with a nostalgia noodle. I'm warning you now, Lorraine, it could involve a little basic primary school level maths. Are you going to be okay with that?
I won't even be able to do that.
No, okay.
Okay, but it'll be entertaining, won't it?
Yes. Listen up, folks. The agony aunts are in residence. Yes, we are once again about to give our sage and wise older lady advice on some midlife problemos. Lorraine, I'm going to kick off with this one from Helen, who says, are you ready? I had a male colleague make a reference to CND today and ask me, do you know who that is? What I wanted to say was, mate, not only do I know who they are, I was there marching, but I didn't. I'm in a weird position in that I work for a progressive company. The demographic is quite youthful and I don't look my age. I feel like such a square peg and am embarrassed, increasingly feeling the age gap in terms of experience, but actually looking younger than I am. In my personal life, I count my blessings. In my professional life, I just feel so isolated. I feel like a secret dinosaur and an imposter posing as younger than I am, and it makes me feel so unsettled and insecure. What do you think?
Do you want me to go first?
I think you should.
Well, I might take a controversial view here. This is about being seen as who you are, isn't it? Which is what we all want to happen to us as we get older. You know, in other cultures, in the Maori culture, in Indian culture, Native American culture, older women are wiser women. They're revered. Many are worshipped. So they wouldn't be putting up with this nonsense at work. But I think that's a bit of a side issue just from reading her comments. I think she's a little bit worried herself about this. And, you know, your age is not the most important thing about you. She's not going to change the culture at work. And I think maybe looking at where you put your value. So in some ways, I get a sense, I don't know enough about Helen, that she puts a lot of value in her youthfulness. And actually, her youthfulness probably isn't where her value is. And it's just a switch of mindset, I think, herself. And then she won't take it so personally. One of the other things she could do is to try and be more at the centre of the culture rather than looking in. I feel like she's looking in from the outside. I'm older, I'm a secret dinosaur, I'm an imposter, I look younger. All these phrases feel like she's looking from the outside. So maybe coming in a bit in the group, finding other women who are interested in her life and her knowledge and things that she knows might make her feel less worried about this kind of thing. Because I don't think she's going to change the culture, but she can change her reaction to it and value what is unique about her. And the uniqueness is being older and being wiser.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because she actually sort of answers her own question halfway through that by saying that age shouldn't be an issue. So she knows age shouldn't be an issue. And doesn't sound to me like that guy was making an issue of her age.
That's what I mean about valuing.
Yeah, so it's just her reaction to it. She's obviously got the old shitty committee going on in her head, hasn't she, planting these ideas. So she needs to get them to bugger off and focus on what she's good at and why she is employed there and why she is good at her job. And I just think how brilliant to be with some youngsters, listen to their take on life. You can smile smugly inwardly when you know that you've been there and you've done it and you've got the answer and you have to just kind of watch them kind of muddling on through. And lucky you, Helen, to look younger than your years. That's quite nice, isn't it?
Well, lucky you, Helen, to have marched with CND.
Yes.
Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. Militant is all in favour of
what she got
that.
To say about that. Yes,
march
good.
Away, take him to one side, pin him against the wall and tell him what's what.
Exactly. And shall I tell you what...
what would Marion do?
Marion, judgy, prudish, sort of rule-following Marion would say, have you checked your workplace policy on diversity and inclusion? Because I'm sure as well as everything else, race, gender, sexual orientation, we older ladies and gents will be protected in there too. So take it up with HR. That's what Marion would say.
And wear your vest.
And wear your vest. Exactly.
Okay, so next up, we've got a tricky friend situation from Jane, who says, I've made a really nice group of local friends in recent years who I enjoy having girly nights out with, and we're planning a weekend away to celebrate our special birthdays next spring. The problem, listen to this, Trish, the problem is one of the women has introduced an old friend of hers who I really don't like. She's one of those people who's on transmit 70% of the time and doesn't listen the other 30%. As soon as someone starts speaking, she starts to talk over them. It's not that she's being rude or obnoxious, she just doesn't seem to read the social cues of normal conversation and probably thinks she's just joining in. I dread it if I have to sit next to her and have to stop myself rolling my eyes sometimes when she interrupts the flow of conversation yet again. I am in two minds as to whether to go on the trip in case she goes. Should I make my excuses now? What do you think, Trish? To stay, to go, to join in? Jane, it's difficult, isn't it?
You've got this lovely thing going on and then someone comes along and spoils it. And I think there's some interesting things here, because I think the first thing, if we focus on the trip, I would do that thing where you imagine yourself in the future, maybe a year on from the trip, and you look back and your friends are all talking about it and they've all had a lovely time. Are you going to be really sad that you've missed out? Are you going to think, oh, do you know what? I could have put up with a bit of butting in and a bit of eye rolling. Could you go and just try your best to tolerate and ignore at the same time this person? And also, is there any way you can find out if she's going before you commit as well?
That's the thing.
You could ask. You could try and see what could happen. And I suppose it's just that thing of, oh God, what can you do? You've just got to try and maybe find out what others like about her. Maybe she's still early into this group. She doesn't understand the group dynamics. I'm being very charitable here. What would you say, Lorraine?
Well, I've got some other thoughts. She's got what they call social competency deficit, hasn't she?
The friend has.
She's not reading the cues, and she's not understanding what's going on. So, and I think we all know that in midlife, our tolerance levels do decline. So we may be reacting with slightly less patience than we had before, so we may have put up with this 10 years ago and just ignored it and got on. So it's worth checking in whether this is just causing slightly more problems with you now because you've got less patience, and whether you could probably just deal with it at the time. It's about setting boundaries as well, but it's also a little bit about having compassion for someone who is like that. Why are they like that? Why does she feel the need to dominate and talk over everything? Perhaps you could talk to your friend about that and just say, monitor it, and just say, this is an observation I have about your friend. I wonder if she's coming. And then I had another thought, an outside thought that came in.
Is it a Millie thought? It's not a Millie thought.
No, it's not a Millie thought, but it is a thought. We often complain about the things we don't like about ourselves.
So we often complain
about this. It's mirroring, isn't it? It might be things, patterns we've carried from our childhood that we don't like about ourselves that someone else may have said is true of us. So would Jane perhaps be a bit of an interrupter? And she feels, I don't know. I always think in life it's worth being slightly curious about why these strong feelings come up.
It could be. Could it be that Jane herself likes to be the centre of attention, maybe, in the conversation? It's worth thinking about herself rather than missing out on something which she's,
by her own admission at the beginning of her letter, she says she would really normally enjoy.
Yes. Shall I tell you what Marion might say? Because as well as being prudish and judgy, I think Marion's a bit passive aggressive. And I think what Marion might do is start a conversation within the group about someone she met recently who's really annoying because she just doesn't listen to people and talks over them all the time. And isn't that annoying when people do that? Marion might say that, do you think? What about Millie?
You know what Millie would do? She would go on the trip, sit next to the friend, and when she started talking, she'd put her hand up and say, stop, stop, I'm still speaking. Enough already.
Yes, she would. That's, you know, all of these things are possibilities.
Run it through.
Nothing is off the table.
When I say Millie, I mean me.
Yes, exactly. Millie is your kind of giving you permission to be
she
you.
Is. Isn't she? Right, let's do number three. This is quite traumatic, this one.
Yes. So on to our third and final dilemma for this week. We've saved the big one, really, to the last. And I have to say, I had my Me Too little synapses pinging. It's from Delia, who says, I had an argument with my 15-year-old daughter last week, and she told me I was a terrible mother. It left me feeling devastated, especially as the truth is that I have found parenting incredibly hard, especially while holding down a full-time job that requires me to travel. I've always thought that I had done my best for my two children, and with my salary have been able to give them a really comfortable life in a nice home and annual holidays. I know I haven't been around as much as my mum was for me. Ironically, we're not particularly close now, but I would hate to think that my kids wouldn't be close to me in the future. My husband just tells me to ignore the comment and move on, but I can't help thinking that maybe my daughter is right. Lorraine, we need all your parenting expertise on this one.
All of us. Yeah. I can't think of anyone I know whose teenagers haven't said, you're the worst mother. In fact, I know someone whose older children have said, I think you were a bad mother. So what's happening, according to the experts I spoke to for my book, so you don't take it personally. We are all good enough mothers. That's all we can be. We can be the best we can be in the context of who we are, how our brains work and our own childhood. And we're good enough and we're going to make mistakes. But when they get to the teenage years and their brain is dismantled and put back together again and they begin separating, the halo on mum has gone. And it's a bit of a shock for them. But I thought she was wonderful. I thought she was my hero. She was my everything. Hold on a minute. She's being a bit shouty. Hold on a minute. She's dropped the ball over here. This is not how I want things to be. So, of course, their first reaction, because they're testing adulthood and they're testing adult emotions, is to go too far and say the worst thing. And they're also saying it to the person they know will still love them, whatever they say. So they can say you're a bad mother just to see how that pans out, to sense what those emotions are and to feel that. And they've got to separate from you. And in order to separate from you, they can't see you as all good, because that's illogical. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. How can you separate from someone who's perfect? They've got to see their spotlight is on the bad bits or the bits that you yourself, and they know you better than anyone else in the whole world, especially daughters. They've mirrored you all the way through up until that point. So this is perfectly natural part of the developmental stage that they're going through. It's not unexpected, but it's unexpected for you. So you're probably taking it really personally. It's probably very hurtful. And also, all children have different personalities. So they will all react in different ways when they realise you're not this perfect human that you were before and they've got to separate. In her head, in all our heads, I think what we have to do is just take away that idea that we are good enough in the context of who we are and where we are at that point. And that's the best we can do. It's a bit painful. She's only 15. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse for a bit, or it might pan out. That might be the limit of her separation. But I think that's probably my advice.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, again, I totally agree with you. We all think this, right? And you know, we all look back and think, what could I have done differently? What could I have done better? And I think the moments for me that the only real major regrets have been the kind of when you react in anger to something and you haven't, you know, you just snap, you react in anger. And, you know, I always feel terrible about it afterwards. But I kind of found that as they got into their teens and a little bit older, they just, if you then apologize, if you feel that you should apologize and you open up a dialogue about it, they can really kind of come to kind of trust you and understand you and really open up about it. And I think for anyone in this situation who's struggling with communication, they should listen to the episode we did where we had a How to Win at Midlife with Dr. Gauri Seth about communication. Just review your communication skills and your communication time. Would you talk? I think I'd talk to my daughter about it and ask her why. Why she said that, and you know,
not in the heat of the moment,
no,
because their brains are never working properly. It's about what they call rupture and repair, isn't it? It's really never about the argument in parenting. It's about how you come back from the argument. And teenagers really need to feel listened to and heard, because they don't feel that themselves. So talking about it maybe 24 hours later, what did you think I'd done particularly? And it's not a winning argument situation. It's just going through, and how do they feel about it, and why do they feel you're a bad mother? I think it takes a while for you to process these things, both of you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If I was Millie, I'd go into the car and I'd shut the door and I'd have a terrible conversation. I'd say, how dare you call me a bad mother? I'd have the conversation.
Or you'd have an imaginary conversation.
Entirely wrong.
Yes.
I'd have an imaginary conversation, get that out of my system, and then go back in as mum who would step in front of
them. Does Millie doesn't get upset and tearful then and sad?
Millie's
about
really
things
angry
like that
all the time.
Oh, she's
just really angry.
Okay, fair enough.
Bloody cross.
Oh, what would Mary, because she's so just no nonsense, pragmatic, sort of get on with it a bit, isn't she? Silliness. I think she'd probably think your husband has the right idea, ignore it and move on. You know, you work, you've provided for this girl, this ungrateful girl, this ungrateful child with all her holidays. Being a parent doesn't mean you have to be totally selfless, does it?
No, it doesn't. Would you take her tweezers maybe and hide them or something?
Oh,
like
maybe,
that? Get
a
secret revenge.
Yes, secret revenge.
So there we have it. Proper advice from proper experts we've spoken to, stuff from inside our heads, and also a special thanks to Marianne and Lily for their thoughts.
Yes.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As you know, we like to share the life learnings of women who've encountered many different situations over the years. And today we're chatting with a woman whose breadth of experience, we hope, will deliver a wealth of useful knowledge for you. It's time to meet Anthea Turner, TV star and the face of many of our much loved Gen X telly shows, from Top of the Pops and GMTV to the National Lottery. Anthea, 61, is also the author of 7 books, the latest being How to Age Well, The Secrets. She became the second highest paid female TV presenter after Cilla Black in the 90s, first grabbing our attention aged 32 as a Blue Peter presenter. Her career has spanned more than 30 years and she has appeared on many primetime shows including The Jump, First Dates, Celebrity SAS Who Dares Wins, Celebrity Big Brother, Celebrity Antique Road Trip, Dancing on Ice, Perfect Housewife and most recently The Real Life Dirty Dancing, where a certain young cast member developed quite a crush on her. Anthea's relationships have often made headlines, from her first marriage to DJ Peter Powell to her high-profile divorce from second husband Grant Bovey, which caught the tabloids' attentions for many years. Today we'll be chatting about how she handled her young life in the public eye, how she rose to the top of her career, what it's like being a stepmum, she has 3 stepdaughters, and how she stays fit and healthy at 61, and what it's like to fall in love again later in life. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife. Anthea, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
What's happening in the world of Anthea Turner this week? What's in your diary?
I'm sitting in my lounge at the moment. I got back from Ibiza last night, which is fantastic at 62 to say you've just had 3 days in Ibiza. And we parted in a nice way, though. We realised that we've all come back with no headache. And I've just put a white wash on and chit-chatting to all my various friends. I cannot settle until I've opened that suitcase. The washing has gone on. Things are hanging at the moment on drying racks. And now I'm happy and now I can relax and talk to you.
We're glad to hear you've had such a lovely time because it's been quite stressful for you this year, Anthea. I mean, like a lot of our listeners, you've been caring for elderly parents and you lost your lovely mum, Jean, didn't you, who died at the age of 91. How have you dealt with the grief process and also caring for your dad, Brian? How's that been for you?
I'm obviously in that age group where you say goodbye to parents. Yeah. I think I'm very lucky to have had my mom into her 92nd year. My dad is 90 in January. He's very fit and healthy, but of course lonely now. You know, they were together for 67 years. My mom, and I know a lot of people will concur with this, she had mini stroke and she did that thing that a lot of people do. And I think it's a lot of women. She fell over a few times. She lost her confidence. So she stopped moving. She was frightened to walk. And as soon as you do that, especially as an older person, and you become physically weaker. And then, of course, you're going to fall even more.
She was a teacher, wasn't she, your mum?
She was a teacher. She always realized that school wasn't just for education. It was to send you out into the world. She obviously ended up with a dyslexic child, which must have horrified us.
She was very supportive of your career and you having a career, wasn't she? Take us back to the beginning, because you started with Bruno Brooks on radio, didn't you?
I got a job working for the Automobile Association, and I got there and they said, oh, would you like to do the road traffic reports on the local BBC station, which is BBC Radio Stoke? And because you've got an extra £14 a month, which was basically my petrol money, I thought, that's great. Okay, then. So I did that. So I started doing road traffic reports. I just liked the environment, the radio environment. So started anoraking at the local BBC station. And then it was actually my boyfriend at the time, Bruno, got offered a job in London to go and work on Radio 1. And I got a job working for a record company as a plugger. So I came down to London and then just by accident went for an audition because I had a little bit of time on my hands. I needed to earn some more money to be a video jock on Sky with Pat Sharp, actually, and Gary Davis. And I got the job.
That's where you started.
But I got sacked from that job after a year because the lady who ran the station said I really wasn't cool enough and I wasn't hip and trendy enough. And I tried to look like a reject from Bananarama, but I just didn't pass it off somehow. And she said, the problem is with you. You're just not right for the station. You're far too Blue Peter.
Oh.
I went out to my car, which I finally paid for by this point, and cried my eyes out. I thought, this is the end of the world. And a little bit later, obviously.
Yes. Little did you know. You had a stellar career. I mean, we just followed all of it, obviously, as Gen X women. It was an interesting time, wasn't it, for women? We had Fern Britton on the show recently, and she was saying how difficult those kind of decades, the sort of late 80s, 90s, were for women in the media. It was very competitive with men. You were probably possibly paid less than men. How did you find negotiating your career ladder and your success in that kind of environment?
Probably for me, it was a little bit different than Fern's journey because I entered the world of children's television, Saturday morning television, Top of the Pops, Blue Peter, other television programs in that sort of genre around it. Blue Peter obviously being, you know, the jewel in the crown. So that type of competitiveness and that type of money division never happened because we were all paid exactly the same on Blue Peter. And when I left Blue Peter and did that massive gear change from Blue Peter to GMTV, and to be perfectly honest, it was Eamon's program. They brought me in not to anchor the big stories, but to do what he didn't really want to do, or it wasn't his remit. So, you know, if the Spice Girls came on, I interviewed them. And that was the way it was all carved up. But the responsibility of the programme was his. But this is where it twisted and changed, because GMTV are realising they've got a bit of a commercial animal here. It was just at the time as well, remember, that was Hello Magazine and OK Magazine, and then none of the newspapers want to be outdone. So they started doing their own little glossy magazine within their newspaper, probably on a Friday or over the weekend. The fish that they were trying to net were just us, really. So it became a feeding frenzy.
Yeah.
And I was right out at the front of that feeding frenzy together with Ulrika Johnson, mm-hmm. Annika Rice, Gabby Roslin, you know, and Princess Diana as well was in that frenzy as well, not as a television presenter, obviously. It was a pressure cooker. It really was. You didn't quite realise how much you were in it, how much you were part of it, and how much of yourself you were giving away at the time.
I mean, from your point of view, and certainly when you look back on the media, your private life then became an integral part of the story of you and the world and your job and your kind of professionalism. How did you protect yourself from that? Because it was really intrusive for you, I think.
Well, I don't think I did, you see. That's the problem, because now, you know, somebody like, say, Holly Willoughby, they have PRs. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'd turned up anywhere and said, well, this is my PR, they'd have thought I was completely up myself. That wasn't what she did.
Did it affect you?
It was vile. it truly affected me, especially when things were made up, half-truths, little grains of truth. And then, of course, I made that fatal mistake of being probably a little bit too accessible, trying to say, oh, no, it didn't happen like that. Or, no, I'll tell you the truth. Da-da-da-da, chit-chat, chit-chat. And then, of course, be completely and utterly annihilated or twisted, far too accessible. So, but nobody knew. We were the practice ground for all the people who have come since. These were uncharted waters of media intrusion and media interest, but also the only reason you do a magazine interview is to support your program that you're working on.
Did people stop you in the street? Were you kind of ambushed when you went to the supermarket, or did you just stop doing the supermarket and all of that?
People would, yes, of course they come up and they wanted to chat to you. And people are actually always consistently very charming, very nice, very respectful. Whatever newspapers do, that people are nice.
So you said just before, Anthea, that sort of looking at life backwards helps you make much more sense of it. And interestingly, you've written a number of books from your experiences, one of which is How to Survive Divorce. Now, midlife is probably a ripe time for women to start thinking about separating from partners, if they're not in love anymore, the kids have left home, etc., etc. What is your advice? Obviously, you put your personal experiences into the book and you researched it. What's your advice for any listeners who might be thinking about splitting up or going through divorce right now?
Well, I think it depends which side of the fence you sit on this one. So either you or the person who is thinking of splitting up from your partner, make sure you're doing the right thing. Oh my goodness, divorce is horrible. I'm going to use that word again, vile. It's not something that you should ever do lightly. We are so interconnected with our friends, our family, and I'm talking joint friends, joint family. You've probably got children, stepchildren, blended families, all sorts. So you have to think long and hard, because once that die is cast, it's very difficult to go back. Some people do manage it, but it's very difficult to go back. First of all, I would always say, do everything you can to save that marriage, because sometimes, and you know, my ex-husband would say, if he was sitting here now, he'd say, actually, the marriage wasn't that bad. It couldn't have been mended. I was just off on one. So the other thing, of course, that happens to us is that our husbands, this is obviously in my case, decided that they went through a midlife, call it a midlife crisis, which often entails an affair. So, you know, and that happened to me. And what you're dealing with then is something, rejection. Rejection is one of the worst things a human deals with. We spoke about death a moment ago, obviously in the case of my mom. She didn't reject me, she died. And they often say death is easier to deal with than divorce, because divorce, if you're the one being rejected, you have to deal with a human emotion we are not hardwired to deal with. Most importantly, when the die is cast, and this is what's going to happen, the way you deal with it is massively important, because you have to remember there's a big life the other side, divorce. It's up to you to go and grab it. But however many tears and however many bottles of red wine you drink, talk to your friends about it. And I couldn't deal with what was going on in my head. So I thought, no, I need a professional here, because I can't put my friends for any more of this. I think it's really, really important to channel your wise woman. And I know that my three stepdaughters, they saw how I dealt with it. And I dealt with it so that we can all function. And we do, as an odd little family.
So there is this life to look forward to, isn't there? And you're in love again as well, aren't you? So this, it's not the end of days, as it were.
No, it's not. I wouldn't be the person I am sitting talking to you with the knowledge that I have about life, myself, and the fun I've been having if I hadn't got divorced. And I tell you what, I worked very hard not to get divorced. Now I'm with the right person for me for this next section of my life. And nobody would be listening to this podcast if they weren't interested. You've got to stay interested.
Well, you are very jolly and very positive. You do look very jolly and positive today. Tell us a little bit about staying fit? Because your books, you put a lot in How to Age Well, the yeah. book. So you're 62. You did Celebrity SAS, which was extraordinary watching. That was really inspirational. How do you stay fit? And I mean, I think attitude is obviously always yeah. part of it.
Well, I have always said that the elixir of life is definitely not in a pot of cream. It is in your attitude. I was given a reasonably good set of genes to start off with, but I have never ever abused those.
Hot dog biscuits for you then, Anthea.
I have a Coca-Cola twice a year, a full fat Coke on ice twice a year.
About hangover cure.
It's amazing. And I love red wine. I do have a background in classical ballet. There's something in your muscle memory that will stay with you. I think deportment is hugely important. I think that it's really important to do everyday movement correctly. I'm sitting talking to you on the sofa, but I am actually sitting up. My back is straight. If I'm walking along, people say, what's the best stomach exercise? Just walk along, but walk along. Check yourself constantly when you're walking. It doesn't matter whether you're walking down the aisles at Sainsbury's. Check yourself walking, put your shoulders back. As soon as you put your shoulders back, you have to engage your core. Your core is your powerhouse. It's the most important part of your body. I know you have legs and there's quads, but your core holds everything up. Make sure that you are always in the right position to stand up, sit down. Don't get out of bed using six little tiny strange movements to get out of bed. Swing over, get up, stand up. Stand up out of a chair. You don't need to use the sides of the chair to lever you or the table to lever you out. Now, the other thing I do, because I'm not enough hours in the day, I don't know these people who've got time to go to the gym constantly. I just, in my dreams. So I've got 2 kilogram of weights around my ankles. I haven't got them on just at the moment. I'm sitting chatting to you, but I will pop them on. Got 4 flights of stairs here. I'll be going up the stairs, down the stairs, 2 kilogram weights. I have a weight vest, which is 5 kilograms. When I go out, sometimes I'll take the dog out and I will put my weight vest on. So while he is sniffing every blade of grass in Battersea Park, I will be doing some squats with a 5 kilogram weight vest on. And I've got wrist weights as well. And the only thing I pop into the gym to do is some really heavy weights. Really hate running. I do break into a little pathetic trot or probably 20 minutes out, 20 minutes back.
Well, pushing it is something that you're very good at. I mean, let's just look at some of these shows you've done. I mean, Celebrity SAS. I mean, I can't believe that, the jump, all of these very physically challenging shows, the things that you've had to do for them. And also, they were so rude to you, I thought, on the SAS. We were sort of sitting on the sofa going,
I know they're calling grandma.
Exactly. I thought that was so rude. I was like, you're out there flying the flag for midlife women. Anyway,
what they try and do, you get very quickly how the army works. It works as a team. It works under discipline. You can't be holding a loaded gun where you have got a wick a centimetre long. You've got to be able to take it. And what they're doing is they're trying to get you to break. So they're thinking, what can we do to turn her, to get her to break? Let's call her grandma, because she'll really hate that. So what they do is they are looking constantly at something that they think will needle you.
Did anything tip you over the edge on these shows? Because you just seem fearless. You seem so together. You're physically fit. You're together mentally. What has pushed you over the edge?
The jump.
Dangerous.
It was, actually. I'm very proud to say I was last woman standing. I wasn't injured that much. I sort of pulled a few muscles, but nothing terrible. However, I ran away to the jump. The universe put that in my lap. It was my first Christmas after divorce, and I was facing my first Christmas on my own. And I know I've got friends and family. There's a chapter in my book called Bloody Christmas. Christmas is great if everything else is lovely in your life. And if it's not, Christmas is a horror.
The worst.
An absolute horror. And for all the nice Christmases I've had pathetic Christmases that I've hated and just wanted to take a sleeping tablet and wake up and get over that 2 weeks, just sleep through it. But I went to the jump. And so really, up until Christmas, I was in Austria skiing. Came home very briefly for Christmas, knackered, time to pack and go back out again. The jump for me was sent from the universe to get me through my first Christmas. And I can't thank it enough. I was so frightened. I had to do something that frightened me so much. I couldn't think about all my woes.
Well, you were very brave. We ask all our guests about their midlife experience, and you've written about it in your book, I was really struck because you're on HRT and you went to the GP, so you must have been, this was 10 years ago, but you said you found a letter that you'd written to your husband explaining how weird you felt, how out of sorts you were, and you must have been going through the perimenopause at the time. Yeah. Talk us through your midlife experience and what you've learned from it, from women who are about to go into it would like to know.
It's only 10 years ago and I was going through it. And now there is so much information out there and so many people have come forward and spoken. I hadn't a clue what was going on. I remember speaking to my mom, who maintained she never went through the menopause.
No.
I remember her being an absolute moo to all of us. My dad, I remember this time in her life when we'd always done something wrong and she was telling us off. And just remember, there was probably 12 months that were not particularly harmonious in our household. And I know exactly what she was going through. But of course, that generation will still not have you believe that anything happened at all. We just got on with it. But actually, we don't need to get on with it now. We need to talk about it. It's a horrible time. You just all of a sudden don't feel yourself. And I know that sounds such a pathetic thing to say, oh, I don't feel myself, but you really don't. You feel like somebody's invaded your body. All your markers are all out by a few degrees. I got spots on my back and I was sweating. And I felt like my confidence was going. I was getting brain fog. I was questioning myself. You want to turn to the person who is most important in your life, who is your husband. And I couldn't. I'd been going backwards and forwards to Toronto at the time because I was doing a program out there and I was sort of commuting. But of course, what I didn't realize is at the time he was going through his own little menopause and he'd obviously taken up with a very exciting in his life, 24-year-old. So his sweaty, moaning wife was just like the last thing he wanted. And I did, I wrote this little letter saying, you know, please understand that. And because I then went reading up about it and found out a lot more about it. And I tried to explain and I thought, I'm going to write this down. And I wrote it all down.
You saw Dr. Louise Newson, who we've had as a guest on the show, and you saw her before anyone was talking about it. So you were very lucky, weren't you, to have found your way through that?
Well, I had a couple of strokes of luck. One was that I went to see my local doctor, who, first of all, was a chap, and he just put me, he said I needed some anxiety tablets. So he gave me anxiety tablets. And I remember looking at them thinking, I don't even want to take you because I'm really worried about taking you. So I went back to go and see the doctor and he wasn't there. And there was a lady doctor there. And she said, oh, don't you don't need those? What you need is HRT. Of course, it was a one tablet fits all. But she said, no, you want this. And she put me on HRT. And it, you know, golden, absolutely, I mean, amazing. It made a huge difference. Unfortunately, there were other things going wrong in my life. So, you know, I sort of get a little bit fuzzy of where perimenopause, menopause and divorce sort of end and finish because it all ended up in sort of just a catastrophe in my life. So it's very difficult to compartmentalize, really. And this is what I feel is very important for anybody who's listening now. You know, HRT is fantastic, but it's not the one cure. Never has there been a better time for you to check on your health. I was very lucky that I met Louise Newson because I happened to chair something. It was an event.
Wellbeing of Women, I think, isn't it?
Wellbeing of Women, that was it. It was Andrew McLean, couldn't make it. So, so a friend of mine rang me up and said, could you just step in, please? My goodness me, I have to thank Andrea McLean for whatever it was, whatever the reason why she couldn't make it. Because there I met Louise Newson and I started to pull together even more information because our health and our hormonal health is a constantly moving target. Don't think, oh, I take this tablet and it's all okay. It's not. Constantly tidy up as you go along. My little perfect housewife bit coming out there. Always keep checking, editing yourself, your book of life. Don't ever sit back and think it's all okay because you just always want to be tweaking. We could eat rubbish when we were younger. We can't now.
No, I lived on pot noodles for about 3 years when I was in my 20s.
Absolutely. If we have a choice, let's please try and take that choice. Look after yourself. Mm-hmm. And actually, self-care isn't selfish. And if you're listening, just think of yourself and think of all those people who depend on you, whether it be parents, children, friends, other extended family. They depend on you and your health. My advice is always look after yourself. because you don't look after others if you look after yourself.
Right. We've come to the point where at the end of our chat, we wondered whether you'd be up for a little quick Gen X pop quiz or a little either or. Can we fire a few things at you? Just some of our favourites. See what you like the most. Are you Swap Shop or Tiswas?
I've got to say both. My Gemini, so I can. I've got both of them. And I once went up to Birmingham to watch Tiswas.
Oh,
Trevor McDonald will always be Trevor McDonald.
Trevor McDonald.
What about Angel Delight or Spotted Dick?
Angel Delight. I've got some in the cupboard.
Have you?
Mark is obsessed with banana Angel Delight. He actually likes the strawberry. I can do the banana, not the strawberry. But I put a banana in it to try and, you know, give it a little bit of something.
This is how we make relationships work.
Yes. We get it on Amazon because the banana flavour is difficult to get hold of. But you can get
there we go. We said she was full of amazing tips and useful advice. Right. Like a Prayer or Like a Virgin?
Like a Virgin.
Now, I know you like cars. Golf GTI or Mark III Ford Escort?
Golf GTI. I had two. I loved it. I played Cinderella in a panto for the one reason I wanted to buy a Golf GTI, and I managed to buy it.
Oh, you've been very entertaining, Anthea. So what next, though? What next for you? You've written 7 books. You've been on every dangerous reality show there is, risking life and limb. What's your plan for the rest of this year into next year?
Mark and I have got to get married sometime soon.
That's exciting.
We've got a few ideas, and then we come up with an idea, and then we think, oh, that's going to be a lot of effort, isn't it? And then we go and do something else. We've got
you met in a nightclub, didn't you? Which is
we met in a nightclub, but we don't actually remember. I don't remember. apparently, I went, oh, hello. But it was actually my friend Lizzie Cundy set us up on a blind date. She went to a party, she saw him, and she said, I know who you really get on with because it's a bit quirky. My friend Anthea. And I said to her, she said, you've got to go on this date. I'm setting you up. And I wouldn't go. So much was I not going to go on this date. Lizzie came with me. She made me go. By
double date.
That was a double, yeah. So we all went, and she brought her boyfriend at the time along on this date. And the rest is history. We've not been apart since, really.
Well, thank you for coming on Postcards from Midlife and sharing all your knowledge with us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
So it's nostalgia noodle time, and you know my mind works in mysterious ways.
I don't understand.
I know, but that's the idea of a noodle, isn't it? Your brain sort of noodly doodle these, and something pops in. And you know our nightdress sewing chat the other week?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I don't know why, but it made Miss Ellie from Dallas pop into.
She did used to come downstairs in her nightdress, or she would be in the kitchen having...
Yes, so then I kind of did a bit of Googling and thought, oh, that's why. And there's pictures of her in big sort of ruched neck sack-like nightdresses. Like, so maybe that was the inspiration that they got us to make these nightdresses based on Miss Ellie. But while I was pondering and reading about Miss Ellie, the actress Barbara Bel Geddes, she was my age when she was Miss Ellie.
What the hell? She was the grand matriarch.
Exactly.
She was supposed to be the wise woman elder of the tribe of
Dallas. So she was actually 56, a bit older than me, when Dallas launched in 1978. And guess how old her son, JR, a.k.a. Larry Hagman, was?
Oh, don't tell me, 58.
Almost. He was 9 years younger than her. So,
that's how they thought women were just old. Once they got to 38, they were just old.
She did always have a sort of misty camera across
Vaseline.
Her. She had a sort of watery eyes. But anyway, I did love thinking about Miss Ellie. Do you know
the Golden
much
about
Miss Ellie?
The Golden Girls were in their 50s as well, and they were supposed to be really old.
And who else I discovered? Nora Batty. Was.
Oh, don't tell me, 27.
45. She would have worn one of those nightdresses.
Right, isn't it, in our midlife years,
exactly.
With all this mixed messaging and bizarre
everything
how women age rules. Do you remember Hey Mickey? This is my nostalgia noodle.
Hey
Mickey, you're so funny. That's it, I can see you moving your arms. Yeah. So she was a cheerleader.
Yes, Tony something.
Basil.
Tony Basil, that's the one.
It was her birthday last week. How old do you think Tony Basil
is? Oh, God, don't tell me. I'm going to guess really badly and say 74.
79.
Oh, it was nearly there. Goodness.
So this doesn't make any sense. And I said, she can't possibly be 79 because she would have been a cheerleader when she did that video, because there was a lot of cheerleading moves in it, having been subjected to a lot of cheerleading school watching things. She was 38 when she met Amy.
Wow. Good for her. Very bouncy. But just one more, and it ties into nightdresses, because she, this one would definitely have not worn a nightdress like a big sack. It would have been a negligee. Nurse Gladys Emmanuel from...
A negligee.
Open All Hours. Do you remember Nurse Gladys?
Yes. Ginger hair. Lovely lady.
She was fabulous. Linda Barron. She was 37 when that started, and Ronnie Barker was 47. But I think he was supposed to be older than her, wasn't he? I think that was...
Well, I don't know. I thought he was perpetually supposed to be about a small boy, wasn't he, in that ridiculous series?
Oh, no, that was Del Boy. Oh, my God.
Who knows?
Oh, my God. David Jason, come on, get with it. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of Postcards from Midlife. New episodes are available to listen to every Sunday on your podcast provider. Please do download them and subscribe, because that counts on our listener numbers and is really helpful for us. And some ratings and reviews would be marvellous as well.
Yes, please. We'd love some reviews. And do tell your friends about us. We want as many women as possible to join in the midlife conversation, which is what our private Facebook group is all about. And we mention it often and we monitor it daily. So if you're not a member yet, come over and join in the chat.
Yes, and please post feedback, nostalgia noodles, brain fog, all of those sorts of things. We love to hear about those on the group, and suggestions of things you'd like to hear talked about, or celebrities and experts you'd love to hear interviewed. And of course, you can email us at hello@postcardsfrommidlife.com or pop a little message on the Instagram. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.